Imagine installing this massive billion-dollar state-of-the-art AI laser security system on the roof of a bank, right? But then you go down to the basement and you leave a 30-year-old rusty padlock on the vault door.
Right, which completely defeats the purpose of lasers.
Exactly. And on August 14th, 2026, the entire tech industry woke up to the terrifying realization that this is basically exactly how our global digital infrastructure is
It
built.
was a chaotic morning, to say the least.
Oh, absolutely. So we have our hands on this massive single-day intelligence briefing from the Tech and Game editorial team, and they are flat out calling this date a watershed morning in tech.
Which is a bold claim, but looking at the sources, I mean, it's warranted.
Yeah, I totally agree. So the mission of our depth dive today for you, the listener, is to synthesize five massive, seemingly separate stories that all broke on this exact same day.
And we're talking about everything from vicious AI price wars to literal state-sponsored cyber attacks.
Right, and we're going to uncover the hidden thread connecting them all. Okay, let's unpack this. Our goal today is to really decode how the tech industry is pivoting from building, experimental AI to just ruthless industrial scale execution.
Well, to truly understand the landscape you're operating in right now, we have to look past the superficial benchmarks.
Yeah.
The conversation has completely evolved.
It really has.
Right, like it's no longer this vanity contest about whose neural model is technically the smartest.
So what's the new metric then?
The new battleground is entirely about logistics. It's about how blindingly fast these models are, how remarkably cheap they are to deploy at scale, and perhaps most critically, the incredibly fragile infrastructure we are forcing them to run on.
Yeah, that infrastructure piece is huge. But let's actually start with the economics, which brings us to Google dropping a total bombshell, right? Gemini 3.7
Yeah,
Flash.
that caught everyone off guard.
Totally. The timeline highlighted in the briefing is what initially caught my attention. This release arrived just 3 weeks after version 3.6.
Which, I mean, in standard software development, 3 weeks is barely enough time to run a basic QA cycle.
Exactly. Let alone train and deploy a frontier model.
It signals a complete restructuring of their computing clusters.
Yeah.
They have clearly automated their evaluation pipelines to just an unprecedented degree.
And this wasn't just a minor patch either. We are looking at a 26% generational improvement.
Yeah, hitting a 78.3 score on the Frontier Code benchmark.
Right. But, algorithmic leaps happen all the time in this space. The real weapon here was the pricing.
The price cut was staggering.
Google paired this release with an ultra-aggressive 50% price cut. They slashed it to $0.075, so 7.5 cents per million input tokens, and 30 cents for output.
Which is just a race to the bottom in the best way possible for developers.
It really is. I've been calling this the Model T moment for artificial intelligence. I mean, it's no longer just about making the smartest AI, it's about making it cheap and efficient enough for mass production.
That's a really good way to look at it.
But I do have to ask, does this massive price slash devalue the technology, or is this purely a volume play by Google?
What's fascinating here is the underlying architectural implication behind that specific price point. You're spot on with the Model T analogy.
Thanks.
This is fundamentally a high-volume infrastructure play. It's driven by real-world economic efficiency.
Okay, so how does that translate technically?
Well, the briefing notes a very specific metric. Gemini 3.7 Flash reduced end-to-end response latency to sub-50 milliseconds.
Wow, sub 50.
Yeah, under 50 milliseconds. When an AI model crosses that threshold of being both fractions of a penny and nearly instantaneous, it ceases to be just a chatbot.
Right, it becomes something else entirely.
Exactly. It becomes an invisible utility layer for high-scale enterprise microservices.
Okay, I want to break that down for the listener because enterprise microservices sounds incredibly dry.
Fair enough.
But the reality of it is actually mind-bending. Why is that latency drop so crucial?
Think about multi-step autonomous agent workflows. Let's say you want to build an AI app that audits a massive code base.
Like thousands of lines of code.
Millions,
Yeah.
even. That AI agent might need to make 50 to 100 separate API calls back and forth to the language model just to complete one single functional check.
Oh, I see. So if each call takes a couple of seconds.
And costs a dollar, then that workflow is economically unscalable and practically unusable. You'd burn through thousands of dollars just waiting for a loading bar.
Right, but at sub 50 milliseconds and a fraction of a cent per call.
Suddenly, a massive tool orchestration at scale isn't just viable, it's expected.
Which means if you are an entrepreneur or a software developer listening to this, the entire economic foundation of your industry just shifted beneath your feet.
Overnight, basically.
The barrier to entry for building wildly complex, high-scale AI applications just plummeted. But cheaper AI inherently means higher volume, right?
Oh, absolutely. There's a direct causal loop here. When you reduce the cost to basically zero, you are inviting millions of autonomous agents to ping your servers billions of times a day.
Which sounds like a nightmare for the servers.
It is. To handle that kind of relentless concurrency without your servers literally catching fire, you need a fundamentally different approach to speed.
And that takes us straight to OpenAI's Counter-Strike.
Yes, the timing here was no accident.
Not at all. They clearly knew Google was going to flood the zone with cheap volume, so on the exact same day, they unveiled GPT 5.6 Sol Ultrafast.
The metrics on this one are wild.
The metrics in the Tech and Game Report are borderline unbelievable. They are hitting over 600 tokens per second with a time-to-first token, or TTFT, of under 30 milliseconds.
And they currently restricted it to invite only enterprise customers.
Right. But okay, let me push back on this for a second because the math doesn't make sense to me on a human level.
Also,
a human being cannot read 600 words a second. The screen would just be a waterfall of text.
So is this speed actually for us, or is this just machines talking to machines?
It is a crucial distinction to make. This level of speed is absolutely not about reading text on a screen.
Okay, then what is it for?
It is about eliminating user-perceived latency in interactive neural interfaces.
Interactive interfaces? Like what?
Think about a real-time customer support voice assistant or a live overlapping translation feed happening dynamically in an earpiece.
Oh, wow. So like translating a live argument where people are talking over each other?
Precisely. Human conversation is chaotic and it's incredibly fast. The natural pause between you finishing a sentence and me starting one is usually around 200 milliseconds.
That fast?
Yeah. If I pause for, say, 500 milliseconds, your brain subconsciously registers that I'm hesitating or maybe the connection dropped.
Yeah, that awkward Zoom silence.
Exactly. Legacy models took over 2 full seconds just to start generating a response. It felt like talking to a robot on a terrible satellite connection. But Sol Ultrafast fixes that.
Sol Ultrafast compresses that latency to below 30 milliseconds. Meaning the AI can interrupt, react, and pivot mid-sentence faster than a human can.
Okay. The briefing mentions they achieved this using something called speculative decoding. It runs up to 14 times faster than standard production weights.
Yes, speculative decoding is a game changer.
I know what standard decoding is, you know, the AI guessing the next word one by one. But how does adding speculation make it 14 times faster?
Let's strip away the jargon. Imagine you're playing chess against a grandmaster.
Okay, I'm with you.
Instead of waiting for you to make your move and then thinking about their response, the grandmaster has already mentally pre-calculated the next 15 possible moves you could make.
Oh, wow.
Right. And they've mapped out their exact counterattack for every single one of those moves. That is what speculative decoding is doing.
So it's not just predicting one word at a time anymore?
No, it executes parallel candidate decoding branches. It uses smaller, faster submodels to guess 20 words across hundreds of different possible sentences simultaneously.
Wait, so it's doing the math for paths that might not even happen?
Yes, but doing that parallel math on modern chips is actually cheaper in terms of time than waiting linearly.
That is wild.
So when the main model decides which word comes next, it looks at the pre-calculated branches. If one matches, it instantly accepts the entire chunk of text at once. It essentially skips the line.
And that is how you hit 600 tokens a second.
Exactly.
So, okay, we have Google making AI practically free and OpenAI engineering it to think faster than a chess grandmaster.
The arms race is fully on.
But we are plugging these insanely fast, incredibly cheap AI agents into our global enterprise infrastructure, which brings us to a massive reality check.
Yeah, this is the pivot point.
Because speed and scale mean nothing if the underlying foundation has a crack in it.
And this is where the narrative of August 14 takes a very dark turn.
Right. While the AI labs were trading blows in the cloud, Microsoft was frantically pushing out an urgent out-of-band security patch.
For anyone not in IT, out-of-band means they bypassed the normal monthly schedule.
Yeah, they hit the big red panic button. They were patching a zero-day vulnerability called Legacy Hive.
A very fitting name, actually.
Seriously. According to the intelligence report, this flaw was embedded deep in the Windows kernel registry handler. It gave attackers absolute system-level privileges.
Not just an admin account. System.
Right, which is the highest possible clearance. And threat intelligence reports show state-sponsored actors weaponized this for nearly a month, completely bypassing Windows Defender.
Operating entirely undetected.
So what does this all mean? Let's bring it back to that scenario I mentioned at the very beginning. We are installing lightning-fast AI security systems on the roof of a bank, but we left a 30-year-old rusty padlock on the vault door.
It is the perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Because it highlights the difference between user space and kernel space in an operating system.
How so?
Most modern applications, including all these shiny new AI tools we just talked about, run in user space. It's like being a tenant in an office building.
Okay, so you can lock your own door.
Right. You can mess up your own office, but you don't have the keys to the electrical grid or the plumbing. The kernel is the building's core infrastructure.
And Legacy Hive broke into the kernel.
Exactly. As the Cyber Threat Intelligence Group stated in the briefing, and this is a direct quote, legacy subroutines residing in modern operating system kernels remain the most dangerous vectors for catastrophic privilege escalation.
Meaning, if they compromise the kernel, none of the AI telemetry or safety guardrails matter at all.
Because the attacker is operating underneath it, the kernel tells the AI what to see.
Oh, man. So if you own the kernel, you can just tell the AI monitor that everything is perfectly fine.
Exactly. You feed it a fake reality while you establish rootkits and ransomware in the background.
This affected all production builds of Windows 11 Enterprise and Windows Server 2025. This is a stark reminder for you, the listener, to verify your systems are patched immediately.
Because AI-driven workflows are only as secure as the operating systems they run on.
And it raises an important question. As we hand over the keys to these high-speed autonomous agents, how fundamentally reckless is it to rely on operating systems dragging around 30 years of legacy code?
It's deeply unsettling to enterprise executives. And that profound vulnerability is exactly what is driving the massive paradigm shift we see in the fourth story.
Right, the push for technological sovereignty.
Yes. The developer community is looking at these kernel-level cloud failures, and they are looking at the fastest AI models locked behind corporate paywalls, and they are pushing back.
They want to bring the intelligence locally, in-house. Which brings us to China's DeepSeek.
The wild card of the day.
Totally. DeepSeek sent shockwaves through the dev community by dropping a new 100% open-source intelligent development environment, or IDE, called DeepSeek Harness.
This is a brilliant strategic move by them.
Unlike Anthropic's Claude Code or Cursor, Harness allows organizations to run code completions on local air-gapped neural models with zero subscription fees.
And they paired it with their new DeepSeek V4 Pro API.
Right. So I want to highlight this phrase from the sources, technological sovereignty. Are we seeing the beginning of a developer rebellion against closed, cloud-tethered ecosystems?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this is the inevitable immune response of the enterprise market.
Immune response? I like that.
The migration to local open-source AI tool chains is driven by data privacy and protection from cloud API downtime.
Because they can't trust the cloud anymore.
Exactly. When a Fortune 500 bank uses a cloud-tethered coding assistant, they're constantly sending snippets of their proprietary code base over the internet to a third-party server.
Which sounds incredibly risky given the Legacy Hive exploit.
It's not just risky, it's often a massive compliance violation. Enterprises want the power of AI coding assistants without sending their crown jewels to an external server.
They need a system physically disconnected from the outside internet, an air-gapped solution.
Right, and Harness allows them to run intelligent multi-file refactoring entirely offline. Plus, it insulates them from outages.
Oh, right. Because if your external API goes down, your engineers can't work.
You're paying your entire engineering department to sit and twiddle their thumbs. Open source sovereignty means you own the means of production.
So put yourself in the shoes of a tech titan CEO on the morning of August 14th.
I'd be sweating, honestly.
Right. You are in a cutthroat price war with Google. You are desperately trying to engineer instant speed like OpenAI. You're dealing with kernel level security threats, and your developers are rebelling to go open source.
You cannot navigate that wild new landscape with the same think tank mentality that got you here. You need a different kind of general at the helm.
Which brings us to the fifth and final story of the day, the changing of the guard, the simultaneous executive earthquakes across these companies.
This was the nail in the coffin for the old way of doing things.
Let's start with DeepMind. Demis Hassabis, the legendary founder, is stepping up to Alphabet chief scientist to focus on long horizon AGI.
Moving away from the day-to-day operations.
Yeah, while Corey Kavakuwoglu takes over as CEO. Meanwhile, at OpenAI, they lose their chief revenue officer and their VP of operations.
But look at who they brought in.
Yes. They bring in Dali Rajic, the former CTO of the cybersecurity firm Wiz.
That is the defining signal of the entire intelligence briefing right there.
Okay, I have an observation about this because it connects perfectly back to our Legacy Hive segment.
Let's hear it.
It is incredibly telling to me that OpenAI just hired a top cybersecurity executive to run their revenue strategy, right as massive kernel exploits are making global headlines.
It makes perfect sense when you realize this marks the definitive end of the experimental AI era.
So the research lab days are over.
Completely. These leadership shifts prove that labs are transitioning into rigorous, high-margin enterprise product factories.
Where security is the product.
Exactly. Regulatory compliance and cloud security are the ultimate priorities now. You cannot sell a massive AI contract today just by showing off a cool demo.
The buyers are too paranoid now.
Hyper-paranoid. The chief revenue officer has to sit across from banking regulators and prove that their infrastructure is immune to exploits like Legacy Hive. Rajic speaks that language.
Wow. Okay, so zooming out, wrapping up this deep dive, the tech and game verdict is absolutely spot on. August 14th, 2026 is a definitive pivot point.
The tech industry completely changed gears in a single morning.
It really did. And the ultimate victors in this new era will be the people and enterprises equipped with faster, cheaper, and more sovereign tools.
I couldn't agree more.
But here's where it gets really interesting. I want to leave you, the listener, with a final provocative thought drawn from the source material.
The Smart History Tags timeline.
Yes. We just spent this whole time talking about cloud models and heavy local enterprise workstations. But if you look at the 2027 roadmap for OpenAI hidden in that briefing, there's a listing for edge distillation vision.
Offering native on-device synthesis in wearable hardware.
Right. So, ponder this. If AI is getting this unbelievably cheap and blindingly fast, and the whole industry is moving toward local air-gapped execution, how long until our smartwatches and phones are doing all this heavy lifting natively?
That is the multi-billion dollar question.
How long until we completely cut the cloud cord once and for all?
It's coming faster than we think.
It really is. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into a truly historic day in tech.
It's been a blast.
As always, keep questioning the information around you, and we'll catch you next time.